Welcome to the Soul Mama Podcast, where we have deep and honest conversations about healing, awakening, spirituality, and wellness on this sacred journey of conscious motherhood. We ask how we can walk this path in a way that nourishes, elevates, and heals us and our children. We deserve space and time to slow down and tune in to our hearts, to heal ourselves, and to honor our highest callings. It starts with us. I'm Nahanda Truscott-Reed. I'm a mother, holistic wellness coach, writer, and speaker, and I am passionate about all of the ways we can raise our consciousness and come into more alignment and power as women and mothers, so we can heal the past and make more empowered choices for the future. Our stories and voices matter. It is my intention that these conversations inspire, motivate, and move you on your own Soul Mama journey. I'm so honored that you're here. Hey, Mama, I hope you are well. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Soul Mama Podcast. And today's guest is Sakina Ballard. And Sakina is a birth trauma specialist, and she was recommended to me when I was speaking to a woman about her traumatic birth and what had helped her to heal. And she had said that you have to speak to Sakina. She has really supported me on my birth healing recovery journey, and she speaks a lot about birth trauma. And I remembered that me and Sakina had actually spoken at a conference way back in the day. And I was like, yeah, let's bring this conversation to the podcast, because it's a foundational, important, key topic when we are talking about the entryways into motherhood. There is going to be something about your birth that perhaps didn't go to plan. And it doesn't have to be severe trauma in the ways that we've been encouraged to perceive, but even just being told to push when you didn't want to push, or being asked to move when you didn't want to move, or anything being denied that didn't go according to your wishes, that to me considers a trauma in the birth time, right? So we really get into what birth trauma actually is and what it isn't, how to know if you've got it, why it affects Black and brown mothers specifically, how to navigate the system when you're trying to reconcile what's actually happened in your birth, different ways to honor your birth story, the type of support that is available, resources and steps that you might begin to explore if you are looking to heal from birth trauma. So I have to say that there is a trigger warning, but in and of itself, I almost don't want to put that trigger warning on it, because I feel like this is a conversation that we have to face. Yes, it can be heavy. Yes, it can be tender. And if you're not ready for that, then of course, do what you need to do to care for yourself. But we need to be able to face the importance of healing our birth stories and healing from any trauma that arose during our birth. So I hope you take a moment to really sit with this one, be gentle with yourself, and I can't say enjoy, but I pray that it's useful. Welcome to the Soul Mama Podcast, Sakina. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's so wonderful to join you. Thank you for inviting me.
When I was thinking about this season of the podcast, I really wanted to create conversations that would offer real healing for women and mothers, so that each conversation would give them a kind of guiding light of hope, that there is things that they can do to move through the things that they may be struggling with. And in the work that I do, birth trauma comes up time and time again. Whether women are conscious of it or not, I can see that it's been a wound that a lot of mothers are carrying. And so I was thinking about who I could bring on to deep dive into this topic. And you came to mind because I know you've been working extensively in this area. So it's a real pleasure to have you here to speak on this topic. I would love for you to begin just with an introduction of yourself and to the work that you do.
Thank you. I'm excited to sort of share this conversation with you. So I'm Sakina Ballard, and I'm a mama of two, actually. I'm a mum of two boys. A lot of my work is around supporting women to sort of, I suppose, unravel their stories, especially when there's complexity and where there's been some pain, and then supporting them to find a path that feels more authentic, more centered for them. And I've come to this work of starting through my own experiences. So I had my own sort of lived experiences of my two boys being born. And that really fundamentally changed a lot of my perceptions around birth, around motherhood, around mental health, all of those things that become linked. And I just became really fascinated with the topic. So I went away and I trained as a birth educator, as a hypnobirthing teacher. I became fascinated with birth trauma and the, you know, what happens to women and birthing people after they've had these experiences around birth. And then trained as a coach and had lots of different therapeutic trainings and that too. So my work's become really a kind of amalgamation of that. First, that, you know, I think what spurs a lot of us on is that experience that we have ourselves, and then has just sort of taken me on a bit of a path of exploration, but also a deep respect and fascination for people who go through this journey and how to support them to come through in a way that feels nourishing for them.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear that your experiences into motherhood felt like they were traumatic. Obviously, it's the catalyst for many of us to get into this healing work, creating the things that we really need. But it's a staggering statistic that over 45% of women who go on to have children are experiencing what is termed birth trauma, right? And I don't know about you, but for me, that statistic was like, how are half of the women who go on to deliver children experiencing this as traumatic? So I just wanted to begin there. What is birth trauma and why are so many women experiencing it?
Yeah, so I think this is something that I think is the first sort of bit of these conversations to unpick, because, you know, when we think about birth, sort of the societal narratives around birth, a lot of people already hold, the idea that birth is somehow difficult, inherently sort of traumatic. And I think that can really invalidate somebody's experience that they're then having. But it can also lead to a lot of doubt and fear in the lead up to birth. The thing about, birth is that it's really complex. In the sense, it's that, you know, a process that happens that should be in many ways fairly straightforward. But of course, we're complex human beings, and all of our sort of rich tapestries go into birth with us. So our pasts go into birth, the stories of sort of the women who've birthed before us go into birth. And often as well, the thing that we don't really learn a lot about is that we're birthing in systems that are often inherently traumatized, inherently struggling themselves, that aren't taking care of the people that work in them, often women, you know, a lot of midwives are women. So we're often having, you know, traumatized systems, traumatizing women, then asking them to support women through this really massive transition through birth without really giving them that grounding, that information, that one-to-one connection, because it is such a powerful space. But it is also an incredibly vulnerable space, and we need that human connection, that human sort of safety more than ever. And I think that is one of the kind of really difficult things about birth trauma, is that it's so often left with the individual, but it's so much bigger than the individual as well. So there's sort of two things about birth trauma. Around 25%, sometimes a lot more, as you say, 45% of people who birth will experience their birth as traumatic. And that is staggering, because that says that actually fundamentally people aren't feeling safe that during part. This transition.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think that safety we think of as environmental or physical, you know, based on the people who are in the room or the environment or the setting. But actually safety begins like in the physiology, I feel, of the woman. Yeah. And so much of that can be impacted by a lot of the things that you mentioned: associations with birth, expectations of birth, other people's stories of birth, your own birth, your mother's experiences of birth, how safe you feel or not in the relationship that you have, how convicted and resourced you feel to actually go into the role of being a mother. And that's why so much of the work that I do with women pre-conception is about unpacking and untangling all of those layers, so that when they call in the spirit of their children, they're doing so in a clear vessel that isn't so compounded by all of these layered traumas, right? But when that then intersects with this system, as you mentioned, that is also traumatized, it feels as if it's setting us up to fail, that there is almost, if you come out unscathed, you're the rarity, not the norm. And so I wonder if we could actually give a definition to what birth trauma is and how women might know if they've experienced it.
this is why there's sort of two aspects, I suppose, to some of those statistics as well, because, you know, we know that a staggering number of women and birthing people experience their birth as traumatic. And so that might be, as we say, feeling unsafe, feeling like actually you're stuck in this process, people aren't hearing you. Often it's about feeling totally unseen, unheard, out of control. These are the themes that come up over and over, feeling unsafe in the body, feeling violated in the body. You know, there's not that kind of consensual, safe relationship with the caregivers, feeling like you don't have choices, feeling like those choices aren't validated when you try to make them, that you're fighting a system to try and be heard and seen and get what you need, or feeling totally uninformed, feeling totally like you don't know what's happening and this is just happening to you rather than you're centered and a part of it, and the sort of, you know, incredibly big transition that's happening to you. A lot of people feel that actually that all of that stuff is taken out of the control. And we know that when those factors are in play, people often experience their birth as traumatic. And that's incredibly difficult. It can lead to us feeling like we've had a sense of failure, feeling like our bodies have failed us, feeling like we've failed our children, failed ourselves, feeling a sense of shame, of guilt. It can actually lead to a lot of kind of issues around reconnecting with our body, especially then when we're thinking about holding our babies, feeding our babies, healing any kind of, you know, healing any kind of post-birth bodies, whether that be having any tears or anything, you know, that just that postpartum healing. It can lead to a lot of disconnect, a lot of fear, and a lot of anxiety within ourselves around what's just happened to us.
Yeah.
And the second part that I think it's important to also distinguish is that we can have that experience, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we will have a kind of a medical diagnosis of, say, PTSD, which people can get through birth. So I think it's important just to make that distinction that actually we can have those incredibly challenging feelings, but over time, those will heal and resolve, even if the narrative is left with us. But actually, for some people, about 1 in 25 people, what will happen is actually those nightmares, that sense of fear, that sense of disconnect, that sort of difficulty healing the body, healing the mind, replaying the story, the sense of shame and guilt becomes pervasive and it doesn't heal. And that's when also we need to think about, actually, has somebody been left with a sort of essentially PTSD from their birth too? So there are sort of these, I think, you know, two levels. And I think sometimes it's important just to distinguish those, not to validate anybody's experience, but to know that actually if your birth was some time ago but you're still really struggling to process what's happened and you're finding that actually you're having nightmares, you're having flashbacks, you have a lot of anxiety, fear about revisiting even some of those spaces, or, you know, things that are still left as real deep scars, then we sometimes need that additional bit of help too, as well as the healing we might do ourselves. We might need some support in healing.
Yeah, it's really helpful to distinguish that, because I think when people hear the words birth trauma, they associate it perhaps with something that has gone really wrong with the mother or the baby. So, you know, in the tragic cases where there is a stillbirth or where there is some kind of negligence or something that happens to the baby or the mother physically, that's kind of what I feel a lot of people associate birth trauma as being. And we don't often also include the more nuanced, subtle kind of situations where women have felt violated, or they felt out of control, or they felt unseen, unheard. And because they've walked away so-called healthy and the child is healthy, they've been told and they start to believe like, oh, okay, well, I kind of got away. Like I got away unscathed, or I'm grateful, or I'm actually blessed because I was saved by, you know, the practitioners who were supporting me, and my baby's well and I'm well. And therefore I don't get permission to use the language birth trauma to describe anything that happened around my birth. And you were describing, you know, some of the symptoms of PTSD, which I can definitely see that women would potentially not even reconnect back to the birth sometimes, because sometimes what I notice is that there's a real disconnect. It's almost like there's a compartmentalization that's happened, and there is a suppression of all of that
emotion around the birth that may have been negative. And there's a need through survival to just keep going, keep pushing through, keep persevering. And when you talk about the birth or you ask about the birth, it's just kind of like, oh, I'm just not even going to go there. Let's just not even go there because I haven't got the capacity to revisit it in a way that feels safe. And so there's also almost like a numbing or a disassociation that is happening. So I wonder if you can speak a little bit to that, because it might not be that they're experiencing that severity of inability to move through their day or move through their relationship with their child, but there is this kind of suppression that's happened at a deeper level that has just pushed it to a deeper place.
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot, actually. And I think that happens a lot more than we realize, because I think actually society asks people to do that. You know, you've given birth, your baby's fine, crack on.
Exactly.
I think that is something that a lot of mothers, parents feel, and they don't get the permission. They don't get the time, the space. They don't get the check-in. You know, a lot of the time when you see a new parent, everyone's cooing over the baby. Very rarely do we ask somebody, how was the birth for you? Are you okay? We don't give that time or space or permission. And so it's very difficult, I think, then for parents to feel, and mothers particularly, to feel that they can take it, because I don't think it's there a lot of the time. You know, the expectation is you are going to bond with your baby and it's going to be this beautiful thing and you're going to feed them and it's all going to be in this sort of bliss state, when actually the reality, as you say, for a lot of people is they leave, they just kind of get told, well, that was okay. You know, you had a normal delivery in inverted commas, your baby's fine, you're okay. Go on, you're doing great. And actually, mothers are doing it. They're doing amazingly, but it doesn't mean they feel supported and it doesn't mean they feel okay. And I think that's a really important distinction. Just because you might be coping and getting through doesn't mean that you're actually all right. And as you say, a really big part of that is how much we can touch those stories. And avoidance is a really, really big thing that we'll see. So even if we have a kind of more extreme example of a birth trauma, we'll see avoidance in different ways. People avoiding going back to the hospital, people avoiding talking about the birth, people avoiding even appointments because they don't want to be reminded of it, because it's so there's no capacity, there's no safety to hold all the emotions, all the stories to actually process, let alone hold, to even acknowledge. And I think if we find ourselves in that space, it's actually quite difficult, because inherently we may not have had the time or the space or the people to process with. And that's, so it becomes a bit catch-22. If we find that we are, you know, suppressing, bottling, compartmentalizing, putting on our mask, we're a great mum, let's carry on, then often it's because maybe we haven't had those safe people around us to explore that with. Maybe we haven't had the time, the safety, the kind of space to be with ourselves in a way that we can allow what can be a bit of a Pandora's box, because birth trauma might be one part of that. But often what we also know is there's a lot of other things that are connected to the birth trauma, so that when people are experiencing their birth as traumatic, it's often because there's other things that have perhaps gone into birth with them, other experiences, other memories, that actually also they might have experienced as traumatic and have that way of coping. So I think it's really important to sort of hold that with compassion as well, because often we place a lot of responsibility in the individual. And actually, when people are avoiding things, it's often the sign that they're not in a space that they feel, or with people they feel they can open up with yet. And so I think if we find ourselves and we notice that in ourselves, I've certainly noticed, you know, times in myself, let's all be honest, that I can't go somewhere, right? Yep. Whether it be about birth or whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. But actually, if we notice that in ourselves, that can be a really nice time to pause and kind of go, what do I need right now? Because actually that might give us an inkling that we need more time. We need some safe people. We need someone who maybe we go to see one-to-one, who's just going to hold that with us safely, slowly, and allow us to unravel it. Maybe we need a bit more support from outside, so that actually we're not constantly trying to contain and move through.
Yeah.
So if we find that in ourselves, I think it's often a chance to actually to be compassionate. But certainly if we're finding it in our friends, in mum groups, actually, you know, we might be talking to someone in a mum's group or a play group and notice that actually it's an area they just can't touch, or we notice they're avoiding certain things, then that might be a chance to if we feel, you know, we've got enough capacity in ourselves, to just ask them, how are you doing? And to gently offer them that sort of safe relationship that they might be able to open up some of that story and some of that pain too.
Yeah. I feel like there is a really big piece around telling the story of the birth. And so often we don't have a ritual in our society or in our culture that allows us to honor what actually happened, you know, whether it went gloriously or not. Like there isn't any holding when you get your health visitor checks. It's all about the baby. There isn't really any space of how did the birth go for you, with all of the emphasis that there is on kind of pre-birth preparation and hypnobirthing and the services and, you know, the potential for women to really prepare for birth if they so choose. There isn't anything after the birth to kind of integrate what actually happens. And so one of the things I do with women is really encourage them, whether they do it with me or with their partner or on their own, to start to write the story of their birth from their perspective, noticing the things that they have blanked out, noticing the things that were most visceral for them at particular points, and then perhaps having a space to share that with someone who was present, so someone who was able to be witnessing that birth, and to almost sense check, like, this is what I was experiencing at this time. How did you experience me at this point? And often partners or birth partners or whoever was in the room can almost fill in blanks that we've almost checked out at certain points. And they can say, when I could see that you were in a different place, or, and, you know, together you can almost craft a fuller story around the actual events of what actually happened, as well as your internal experience of what was happening. And then I also invite women to kind of rewrite that in a way that not denies what they've gone through, but allows them to kind of take back control in places. So for example, I had a woman who, you know, she was told to push and she knew she didn't want to push instinctively at that point. And she was like, no, I need to wait. And she did what she needed to do and she went to sleep. And then she came back and she had the energy to do what she needed to do. And I was highlighting back to her, reflecting that that was a moment of power. Even though in your mind, you've processed your birth as a disempowering experience, there were moments in there where you were in your power, where you did use your voice, where you did speak up, where you did say what you needed. And you have to honor that. So speak to me about birth story and birth story rewriting.
Yeah, I think it's really important, actually, when we think about our stories, which particularly when we've experienced them internally, can forget often, we can neglect the parts of ourselves that were incredibly present, incredibly resourceful, incredibly strong, incredibly able to stay with something. And often we are our worst critics, as well as, you know, as well as experiencing and thinking other people things about us. Often we are actually really hard on ourselves, and we can forget to give ourselves that kind of validation of what we have done. And I think that's a really important part of any kind of story processing, is really seeing that the bigger picture of the story that we might not be able to see for ourselves. And I think in terms of birth story processing, I think it's wonderful when we can speak to our partners, maybe kind of have that collective conversation, have a collective narrative. And I think it also depends what they've experienced too, because often if birth has been difficult, then if our partners or people who are birth partners, whether that be our life partners or, you know, somebody who's safe with us that we've invited into birth, they might have also experienced their own external visceral trauma or challenge through that experience. So I think when we do that, we need to also sense check with each other how safe we feel. And as you say, we need to hold our own story whilst knowing what parts we want to rewrite, because one of the things we can avoid sometimes is actually delving into our own feelings that might stay present with us by kind of going, oh, okay, well, that bit's all right. I'm invalidating our own experience in order to try and move through it. So I think it's a wonderful thing when we can do that, and particularly if birth has felt safe enough for the other person to hold us through that, that's really powerful. I mean, there's some fantastic resources for it as well when people want to come and write that can help them. There's a book called How to Heal a Bad Birth, which I would really recommend. And Dr. Emma Sandsberg, one of the co-founders of Make Birth Better, wrote a book called Why Birth Trauma Matters. It's a really small, accessible, beautiful book that's just a very validating way to maybe, you know, you mentioned earlier, people think maybe their birth was traumatic, or they're listening to this and thinking, actually, I had a difficult experience. Was it trauma? You know, that's a really accessible book just to give ourselves that permission to sort of feel actually what happened to me, what was my reality. But I think sharing our stories is really, really important. But as you say, it's about who we might share them with and who can hold that and help us structure. Because particularly when we've had difficult stories, what can end up happening is they replay and replay and we can ruminate over them. So we're not actually processing that story. It's actually just strengthening the narrative that we might not necessarily want to hold. So as you say, actually having someone to work with like yourself, or, you know, somebody who's going to contain, and having that story told, held, the parts that feel painful, being able to maybe reframe them if we feel we've got that capacity for reframing. But also it's often, there's two things as well, that is visceral. It's deep, you know, birth stories aren't just cognitive, so we can do a reframing. But as you mentioned earlier, birth is deeply visceral. And when we retell our stories and we open up those spaces, these are deep body held emotions, sensations and memories. But actually, we also need to tend to that too. So we need to be in spaces where we can pause, we can breathe, we can sleep, we can nourish ourselves as our bodies are also letting go of some of these stories. And that's really important to give ourselves permission for that too. You know, we can mentally process something, but we also have to often viscerally process it. And the other thing I was going to say to that is another thing sometimes people find helpful, and you can do this, I think it's up to 7 years after your birth, is you can have a birth debrief. So if you have experienced birth as difficult, you can ask to go back, and often a consultant midwife or somebody who is at the space that you birthed or leading the team that you birthed can go through your notes with you. So even if you don't have, say, a partner who can do that with you, sometimes you can, well, anyone can go back up to 7 years and actually can have your birth story via the notes sort of talked through with you. And actually a lot of the time people find that quite healing. It's exactly what you said. It's somebody else giving that external perspective, looking through the notes, saying, well, at this point, this just decision was made and you actually did incredibly well. And look what you did. You know, you managed to get to this point and you made this decision because you were tired or you needed rest or you needed some space or you needed things to move along, whatever it is. And actually having that can also be really helpful. So even if we don't have that safe person and, you know, a partner or somebody who could do that with us who is in present at the birth, we can have that maybe through our healthcare providers and the midwifery team, which I know a lot of people find really healing, just to go back into a space and actually hear just what they did and how powerful and how strong and how incredible they were every step of the journey, which is something we can often forget.
And so in thinking about what you alluded to earlier, in the sense that the system itself is inherently traumatized and the medical system kind of is set up to almost decenter the birthing woman, right? Like she's not coming in her full power to have an experience that is going to be inherently her own. She is coming in to be managed, to be monitored, to be kind of moved through a particular process as they see it. So as we're speaking about this, for women who might want to have further children or who are pregnant and are hearing that that may not be the safest space to birth, is your answer to perhaps set up a home birth or to have an alternative space in which you can birth that you feel safe? Or are there ways that you can engage in the medical system in a way that kind of protects you from birth trauma?
That's a really good question. And I think there isn't like a really easy answer to this, because we're really talking about individual needs. And this is the ultimate question, isn't it? I work with Make Birth Better, which is an amazing organization, parents and professionals coming together to really think about birth trauma. And we often sort of delve into this question, you know, how do we do this? How do we support people inherently feeling safe in something that we know is a traumatized system? Home births are for some people, they're not for everyone. And I think it's really important to know, if I'm working with someone, what I would delve into is what makes that individual feel safe. And in order to know what makes you feel safe, you actually need to understand what your vulnerabilities are. And that's sometimes what we need space and time to do, because we don't necessarily understand the susceptibility that we have. For example, if we've had previous traumas, sexual traumas, physical traumas, most of the time people don't necessarily link their past to what's happening in their present. So if you've had previous birth trauma and you're thinking to birth again, of course that previous experience is going to impact you. And then if you were to track back a little bit more, you might find there are other experiences that happened in your life that left you feeling physically vulnerable, that left you feeling unseen, unheard. And they're things that also need to be given space and time to consider. So that actually it's not so much where you give birth, but it is about having that time to understand what you need and to try and put some scaffolding and some protection around you. So for some people, actually birthing, you know, in their own space, having a home birth, really being with the people and the places that make them feel safe, that's really important. But for others, that's less important. What feels more important is actually that maybe they can try and get the same midwife. And so you might push for a continuity of carer. So you might actually say, look, I've had these previous traumas. I really am the sort of person who needs to have the same midwife through my care. So that might be where you advocate. It might be making sure that whatever happens, your partner, your birth partner can stay with you, or they can advocate for you, because actually you don't feel safe trying to have those conversations. And some people might do a lot more preparation work with their birth partners to really understand what their needs are. And their birth partners really try and create an environment that feels safe for that person, so that person can really tune into their internal experience, because they feel safe that the external experience is going to be looked after by somebody they know and they trust and who's there looking out for them. And for some people, it might be things like, actually, you know, if there's been previous sexual trauma, they might say, I absolutely do not want to have internal vaginal examinations. You know, it can be something as small as that that re-empowers somebody to say, if you can leave me alone or, you know, not do that, then I'm willing to come into the birth centre. I will feel safe being with you if you can give me these sort of protections for my body or, you know, my psyche. So there are lots of things we can do. And I think often it's one, a shame that we put such an onus on an individual who might already be traumatized by that system. But I think for the individual, it's empowering to know that they're not just going in totally exposed, totally vulnerable, because they have an understanding of who they are and what they need. And that's incredibly centering for a lot of people going into birth, either for the first time, having explored what their vulnerabilities are and their susceptibilities. They're not always vulnerabilities, sometimes they're strengths, just susceptibilities to what might cause trauma. But actually also for those going back in to be able to try and harness a different experience for themselves, something that feels more healing, that feels like they are more part of that experience for themselves, because they've been able to bring their voice and their presence to it in a way that they feel seen. And so it can really depend on the individual what that looks like. But I think it is important to also say that whilst that onus goes into the individual, we also often want to empower that individual to ask the system to meet them.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they will, you know, we can't guarantee what's going to come back to us. But actually, it's okay to ask for what you want, and it's okay to ask for what you need, especially if you know that there has been a kind of harm or, a wound left there before. It's even more important to know that you're allowed to ask for what you need and to push for it too, because things are available. You know, continuity of care is available. Home births are available. It is possible to not have to have continuous fetal monitoring. It is possible to move around if you need to. So even if you want to have an epidural, to have a mobile epidural, you know, all of those things are possible. And sometimes it's about knowing that they're possible so that we can push for them, we can ask for them, because that's the thing that's going to feel important to us. And I think a lot of the time it's about being given the permission to do that too. And that's where we might need a little team. So then we might have, you know, somebody we're working with who gives us that kind of encouragement that we're allowed to do that. We might have a doula with us, because actually we know that they're going to maybe know that system quite well. They're going to be able to get their elbows out and create that protective space. It might be, you know, having our partner and a friend that we really trust, because we know that friend's been through this and they're going to be able to work with our partner to really kind of give us the numbers that we need to feel like I've got my team around me. It can be different for everybody,
yeah,
but it is about tuning into what I think you need and understanding what your susceptibilities are. And that can take a bit of time and preparation, as you said before, and actually even preconception. That's an ideal time to really start to think and look at these things.
Yeah. Having heard what you've just shared there, this real need to have an awareness and to have an education around what the landscape is at the moment around birth, and to know your rights and to know how you can navigate that system in a place of power. Because a lot of times we have this language and association of, you know, asking for permission or, you know, trying to push back against things that have been placed on us. But actually, I think centering us as the women who are the ones birthing, we are the ones who have the power, we are the ones who give the consent, we Absolutely. Are the ones who have the authority. That's we it. Get to say, you know, this is what I want, this is not what I want. And that shouldn't be in the midst of birth when you're in an altered state where you might be really fatigued, where you might be experiencing really intense sensations. And then all of the visions that women have sometimes go out of the window because they're like, okay, I'm here and I'm being bombarded by this pressure. I'm just going to fold because I'm being told that this is the safest thing to do for me and my child. And so I really want to encourage women who are perhaps at that stage of considering, you know, their choices around what would make a safe birth for them, to really take up that seat as being in the position of power and authority. And I can speak to that in my own personal experience for when I had my son, because I was deemed high risk because I'd had a postpartum hemorrhage of my daughter, the home birth that I'd planned was not being supported by the midwife team. And so they put so much fear into me and my husband around, you know, you could leave your child an orphan if you have this choice and you decide to have a home birth. And I was like, I was left reeling after these appointments, because I was like, there's nothing in my physiology that's telling me that I don't feel safe. Like I know the risks. I'm an educated and informed woman. I'm preparing myself and my mind and my body and my spirit. I'm talking to my baby every single day. Like, I believe in my capacity to birth well. So I had to have several meetings with the chief midwife and the head of the maternity services, and literally writing out my birth plan line by line, saying, I don't want any intervention unless there is reason or signs of an emergency or some kind of situation occurring. Please allow me to birth in my natural way. And it was remarkable that I had to do all of that. I literally had to sign things saying, if anything happens, you know, it's my responsibility, and the hospital wasn't going to take responsibility. And it brought up a lot for me, because I was like, am I making a wrong decision here? Like, all, everything is seemingly against me. But I persevered and I stayed on my path, and I birthed my son healthily with no intervention, with no bleeding, which was this major concern. And I went back to her and I was like, you know, we had like all of those meetings. There has been none of the things that you've spoken about. Can you record this experience for other mums like me who are asking for the data and the statistics? And she was like, oh, you're right. We don't record births like this. We don't record it anywhere. And I was like, so you're ready to come to me with all of the data of what can go wrong, but you're not recording when it goes well. So you're not actually giving women a really informed picture of what happens when they take choices that are not what you prescribe. And so for me, it was really empowering to kind of walk through that journey in my power, to recognize that just because they're the ones who are giving themselves the authority doesn't mean that they're the ones who know what's best for you and your child. And so I just want to encourage women who are, you know, considering what they're going to do, to really just go within to what helps you make those decisions, to feel safe, to feel in your power, and to feel like you are the one giving consent to them, not that you're asking for permission. But on that note, I wanted to just speak to Black and brown women specifically, because we've had the Embrace report. We know that there are statistics around higher rates of mortality, both for mother and child, for Black and brown women compared to their white counterparts. Why are Black women more predisposed to birth trauma?
I think this is a really important question to address, that actually this is not about anything inherently in Black or brown women. This is about systems and institutions and the way in which actually we don't really listen to Black women. We don't really listen to brown women. You know, I've got, as you know, my own podcast, Complexion, sharing the stories of Black and brown voices, because actually when we look around us, who are the stories we hear the very least? Who who do we never really hear from, and we hardly ever hear from, everyday Black and brown women who are just often at the very bottom rung of where we really place our attention, right? We do not hold their stories in mind. We don't see them. We don't hear them. We don't hold into account their realities. We don't hold into account their stories, their you know, survival, all of the things, the intergenerational stuff that they're holding. These powerful, amazing women getting up every day, literally weaving their stories into the fabric of our society, and we very rarely pay attention to them. So when we think about all of those things that we were saying about, you know, what can contribute to birth trauma, that feeling of being out of control, people doing things to us, not being seen, not being heard, prior susceptibilities that we may have had, like previous traumas, intergenerational traumas, like what's happened in the bodies of the women who come before us, because that gets passed through the generational line, right? And then we go into a space that very rarely do we see any kind of, you know, medical research done on Black or brown bodies, and that the research that has happened has inherently left distrust and trauma generationally. So I think they're the things that we have to think about. So when I'm working with, you know, Black, brown women birthing people and thinking about birth, we are thinking about all the things we first spoke about. And then we're thinking about the sort of deeper aspect of what it means to really be safe in our bodies and to really hold our power and our voice. And actually, it's the challenge is the onus is we actually ask Black and brown people to do a lot more of that work, because we have to do a lot more advocating. We have to do a lot more empowering ourselves to speak up, because traditionally, one, we're not heard. And two, you know, we've had this sort of colonialist system that has given a massive power imbalance. You know, I know that if I saw, you know, a white male doctor, the perception that happens to me is, wow, that's where power lies, right? So there is an even greater power imbalance and dynamic that can happen. So I think a big part of it is holding in mind, actually, not that it's actually to do with the individual, it's to do with a lot of things around. And actually, we ask the individual to probably have to do, sadly, in order to experience birth in a way that feels safe for them, they have to currently do a lot more of the work. And what would be amazing to see is the systems, the environment, really starting to hold that susceptibility that they've created a lot more.
And I think when I was listening to you say that, I was thinking about the dynamics that happen when you are in a minority in an all-white birth team, right? There's potentially the physiological, visceral fear that you might feel having heard the narratives around the unsafety for Black and brown birthing women in these spaces. You're coming in with potentially extra fear, extra anxiety. And then sometimes there's this sense that, okay, well, if I have a Black doula or if I have a Black midwife, that's going to make me inherently a little bit safer in the room. And then actually what we hear is that, unfortunately, because those Black women within the system are often overworked, over-pressured, under-resourced, tired, fatigued, and there's almost like an internalization that happens where they perhaps are internalizing some of that racism themselves.
Yeah.
And that then comes out in a more negative way. So sometimes the potential visual safety of like, oh, I would like to choose the Black birthing professional to be in the room with me, can end up being more traumatic than if you didn't. And this is not a blanket statement or put blame anywhere, but it's just to really tease out the fragmentation that's happening at all levels within the medical system. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is so complex, right? Because we inherently need people that we feel safe with. It's an evolutionary adaptation. We, you know, humans birth with somebody and we birth with people who make us feel safe in environments that make us feel safe. They are the most supportive ways in which we can birth. And it actually doesn't matter whether we birth vaginally or abdominally. Actually, what we need to support any kind of physiology, to support an experience, is people and environments that make us feel safe. It's incredibly challenging what you've just posed, right? Because how do we create or ask people to come in when we know that actually they might feel safer to us, but actually in a system, they may not feel fully safe they may not have that kind of safety. I'd love to give like this brilliant overarching answer, and I don't think there is one. I think what it comes down to is actually very honest conversations, very honest kind of relationships with people. So actually, if we're feeling that, I think we call out the team, right? I think we name it with our midwifery team and say, or our healthcare team, or whoever it is, if that's something we're feeling, being able to say it out loud and say, actually, I'm not feeling very safe here. Like, I'm in a team of all white people. I feel vulnerable. I know what the statistics are, but I also understand the reality of what it means to live in my body and my complexion. And this doesn't feel good for me. How are we going to work on this? I would like this person to come and support me. How are you going to make sure that their voice is heard in the room? Because that's a concern for me. And I think sometimes the best way that we approach these things is to call it out, you know, because there isn't that answer. There isn't, you know, there isn't a magic solution that, and actually it's the work. It's the work that those teams need to do. They may not realize that's how they've set themselves up. That's how they're being experienced. And actually, there's a learning opportunity for them there too. And there's an opportunity often when we're in those spaces to actually have our voices heard in a way that feels authentic and meaningful, rather than perpetuating this sort of cycle that goes around. And so, you know, if we find ourselves in those positions, I'd say sometimes the best place to start, certainly, is to call it and name it, because we're allowed to feel the things we feel. And if it's there and we're going to be expected to feel safe with people, then we need to at least be able to be honest. We need to be able to trust them. And that's the base level of safety, is I can tell you how I feel and you'll receive me. Right? Like, yeah. So that's where we start, I think.
And to remember that we always have the choice, right? If it doesn't feel safe and that is still not being heard, you do get to choose if you want to choose a different birthing team.
Absolutely.
Or if you want to move to a different hospital, yeah. Or if you want to transfer to that being a home birth, or you want to have your doula, or you want to invite your friends. I've had one of my clients have her four best friends all around her while she gave birth. And I was like, that's amazing, you know? So there are so many ways that we can call in the safety and call in the support. And I think it's really important to remember that. So we've spoken a lot about some of the issues, both systemically and that can occur in women who have experienced birth trauma. I want us to spend some time talking about healing it. You've mentioned kind of seeking out support to rewrite your birth story, but what else can women do who know that they've had a traumatic birth and want to actually heal it and process it? What can they do?
So I'm just going to first just share some resources that actually anyone can go to. They're free. They're places that are very informative. So there's a book called How to Heal a Bad Birth, which is a really, if you think, actually, do you know what? I wouldn't call my birth traumatic, but I didn't have a good birth. That's a brilliant place to also start, you know, starting to unpick what were the emotions, what happened. And I would recommend that for anyone who feels dissatisfied with their birth. It's a really useful resource. Why Birth Trauma Matters by Dr. Emma Svansburg. Have a look at Make Birth Better. There are so many stories, resources on there. We share stories of parents. We ask parents to share their story too. That can often feel very healing. There's a network of champions on there. So other people who are wanting to use their experiences and make a difference. So there's lots of brilliant stuff there. I'd also recommend AIMS and Birthrights if you're thinking of birthing again. They both have resources and can support. So that there's, you know, some signposts for people if you're kind of feeling like I need to get into this more. If you're wanting to explore it for yourself, first off, I think it's giving ourselves a bit of space and time, carving it out to actually just be with our story, journaling it down or leaving voice notes for ourselves. Some people don't enjoy writing. Being able to actually get our story out of us, right? Like, so it doesn't matter where we put it initially, and it doesn't even have to be with somebody else to start with. First of all, it's being able to acknowledge what we feel has happened. So that very first part is validating for ourselves that this story has happened to us. And then I think another part of that is, as you said, the next bit is finding someone who can witness that, right? Someone safe, someone who's going to help hold that story, maybe help us reframe it. That might be a partner. It might be, you know, people who work professionally like yourselves, like myself. We can hold those stories. We can help shape them. It might be going back and speaking to a consultant midwife, someone else who can hear, who can help hold that story. That's the kind of cognitive part, right? So that's the bit where we acknowledge our story, start to reframe our story. But often what we're also left with is the visceral, the emotional parts of our story that can feel much harder to allow to settle. And that's where I think we need to get some support. So if we feel somatically that we're not healing, you know, if we've had a bad birth, often we find that our bodies don't heal so well either. You know, it takes longer, or we're feeling that sensation of pain in the body. So really getting some physical support to heal. That can be a massive part of healing and moving forward, is acknowledging our body. So I know for women often who've had cesareans, one of the things that they feel really sad about is no one checks their scar. No one asks them, you know, how's your scar healing? That really physical manifestation of their birth, if they found a cesarean difficult, not everybody does, some people do, some people don't, but actually acknowledging the places that we've given birth. So asking someone else to check it for us can be a really nice way of feeling cared for. And also starting to connect with it ourselves, you know, scar massage, tissue massage can be a really nice way of just reconnecting with the body, a really important part of healing. It sounds really small, but actually just being able to touch the places that maybe we've given birth and make that connection for ourselves, allowing ourselves to cry, to feel those feelings as they come out. And then actually, often I think it's about allowing the emotions to exist too. So giving ourselves space. One of the hardest things I think with birth trauma particularly is that, unlike other things that might happen to us in life, where something happens and then we can maybe take a few weeks off work, we can try and process what's just happened, we've got people to talk to about it. When we have a baby, it's straight into the caring for the baby. It's straight into this new life, this massive adaptation. Often, well, you know, we don't get time to nourish ourselves physically. We don't get time to sleep. We don't get all of the things that we know help us to heal readily available. Sometimes there's no one around us and we're sort of, you know, doing a lot by ourselves or on our own. So actually sometimes healing is also about healing those parts. So it's about going, do you know what, I matter. So I'm going to take time to physically go to the toilet, to drink my water, to really allow the body to heal and to connect with the body, to take a warm bath, to have a massage, not to, you know, be pumping out, trying to get my body back in inverted commas, but I'm actually going to nourish this process of my body of healing. And then it can be about finding safe people as well. So yes, we might work with somebody to process our story, but actually what we often need to heal after birth to this community, we need other parents, other mothers, we need other women around us often who can hold that space with us, who can validate that space for us and just find ourselves in connection. And I think the important thing to say is there's no final destination and it's not a linear journey. Often people feel like, oh, I did so well, I was like not crying about my birth, and then 3 months later someone asked me something and these tears came to my eyes, what's going on? I thought I'd done it. No, healing isn't linear. It's deep and it's visceral and it's physical, it's psychological, it's spiritual. There's so many aspects to our healing. And I think giving ourselves permission to go on the journey, to feel our feelings, to check in with what we need and know that we are allowed to have those met. You know, we're allowed to try and build networks, lives, nourishment around us. And often a big part of healing, I think, is being given the space to grieve, and then being given the power to have the permission to have the things we really need. So I think there'd be this kind of two things. There's lots of resources we can do and find, but for everyone, it's going to be individual. But they'd be the two things, giving ourselves the space and the safety to grieve, and then the permission to, and the empowerment to give ourselves permission to get what we really need.
Thank you so much for sharing this, Sakina. I know it's a really heavy subject and it can bring up a lot of emotions in women. When I mentioned I was doing this podcast, I was speaking to a woman at my yoga class who's in her 60s. And she was like, oh, what do you mean by birth trauma? And I said, you know, anything that felt like it was too much to bear, or it was not the way that you planned. Or, and then she was like, oh my gosh, like, my son's 36. And I really believe I've just recognized that what that was traumatic. And I was like, yeah. Wow, you've been operating in the world for 36 years. So I think the thing that I'm taking from this is that it's never too late to begin to heal birth trauma, that there is hope that we can heal it and that we can call in the support that we need, and that there's a lot that we can do to allow our bodies to feel safe again, you know, whether or not any of those external things are in our control in terms of community or partnership, but even just loving touch to ourselves, loving words to ourselves, honoring our body, honoring the journey that we've been through, you know, finding ways to pour into ourselves lovingly and with grace to forgive, you know, the trauma that has happened in a way that gives you compassion and space to move forward. So thank you for sharing all of these resources. I like to ask all of my guests at the end, you know, what's one thing you would like to gift to mothers?
Gosh, there's so many. But if there was one thing, I think it would be self-compassion, to know that wherever we are in our journey, we are doing amazingly. We're here, we're showing up with everything we've got. And so often we can forget that with external judgments and other things, but actually to really see themselves in the eyes of love and self-compassion, I think would be one thing I'd love to give to all mothers.
Thank you. And for women who might want to get in touch with you and to find out more about your work, where can we find you?
Yeah, so you can come and have a look at my website. So it's sakinaballard.com. I'm also on Instagram, just with my name, Sakina Ballard. And you can also find a whole load of amazing resources and support also on Make Birth Better around this topic. So if you do feel touched by this topic and you don't quite know where to go next, there's lots of things. You can have a look at Make Birth Better, and there's lots of amazing support and resources on there.
Thank you. So I will put all of the links to everything that you've mentioned in our show notes. But for now, thank you, Sakina, for your time, for your energy, for your wisdom. And I pray that the women who are listening to this, who may have been affected, just recognize that you're not alone, that it's not your fault, and that there is hope.
Absolutely. And healing is so possible. Thank you so much for having me come and talk to you. It's been a beautiful conversation. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to that conversation. It brought up so much for me in my own personal experiences of the two births that I've had, but also for the work that I've done supporting women through pregnancy, through their conception journeys, and into motherhood. Because at some point, we're going to have to face what happened in our births, even if they went, you know, on paper according to plan, and we've come out healthy, our children have come out healthy, to be able to have a space to unpack, you know, what didn't go to plan, I think is really important. And I'm so grateful that Sakina was able to do that with such delicacy and tenderness and give us so many resources as well. So everything that she mentioned, I've linked to on the show notes. So please do go and have a look at that on the website, which is www.soulmamajourney.com. Of course, you can check Sakina and her work as well. And if birth trauma is something that you feel like you are still navigating, be easy with yourself, because it's not a quick thing to glance over. And it's also not something that I encourage that we just suppress, right? We actually really need to take that time and space to be able to sit with and get support and process and integrate what happened in our births. So I pray that this has served you in some way to healing your own birth trauma. If you know anyone who has actually struggled with this, I really encourage you to share this with them too. And let's heal from anything that was traumatic in our births. As always, if there's any questions that you have, anything that came up for you, anything that you want to comment on or discuss with me, please jump over to Instagram at Soul Mama Journey. DM me, comment on this post, and yeah, let's continue the conversation, because it's a really big and important one. I appreciate you. Thank you for listening, and we'll touch in again next week. Thank you so much for listening to the Soul Mama podcast. You can head over to soulmamajourney.com for more resources and ways that I can support you on your journey. I'm most active on Instagram, so you can follow me at Soul Mama Coach. Also, get in touch with me via email at nahanda@soulmamajourney.com. I read and respond to every single message. It takes me ages, but I really love hearing from you. Please take a moment to rate it wherever you've listened. And if you feel like you've got some value from this, please share it with another mother. I appreciate you. Thank you.